Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by Heather Gudenkauf, who is an Iowa author. Well, you can't hear that enough, right? And she's out with a brand new novel, Everyone is Watching. This is a closed room or a closed universe thriller. And Heather's, I think this is your 10th book, right, Heather?
It is. Your tenth
novel. So I know what I've loved about your books is they are all set in Iowa, or the majority of the ones that I've read have all been set in Iowa. This one has an Iowa character, but you have to take us out of Iowa to make the story work. Can you explain why you're leaving the state behind for this story?
Yes. So for Everyone is Watching, the main characters all received this invitation to take part in this over-the-top competition reality series in Napa Valley. And for the story to work, I needed to really take my characters out of their element. So they come from all over the country, including Mare, who is a mom from Iowa, small-time Iowa, who is desperate to win the big prize, which is $10 million. So she has to leave the comfort of home, her children, and then just jump into this wild adventure.
What I thought was interesting is the people who are chosen for this crazy reality competition that you've developed here, three of them are from big cities, Boston, Massachusetts, Atlanta, Georgia, San Francisco, California. You've got the main one from Calico, Iowa, and then a town in Texas, Dripping Springs, I believe, Texas. And so when you went about picking the regions that they were all from, was that just sort of a shot in the dark for you as it started, or did that come into full play for you eventually?
It really came as I developed the story and got to know the characters as I wrote them. I knew that they were all coming from different walks of life with different levels of success in regards to career. And so, we have the big city folks, we have backgrounds really play in to where they come from, why they're taking part in this competition, and the secrets that they're trying to hide.
And now my world of reality TV, I watched a couple seasons of American Idol like 15 years ago, and so I'm just not a reality TV viewer, but you really get into the behind the scenes of how some of these reality shows, or at least this reality show, and I'm sure it's based somewhat on fact, how they come together. And so as you sort of peel back the onion skin of reality TV, were you kind of surprised at just the craziness that goes on behind them?
I wasn't as surprised as you'd think I'd be. I watched an inordinate amount of reality TV as I wrote this book. And it was really interesting. And, doing some of the behind-the-scenes research as well, just really what goes into it and how much is, it's not necessarily manufactured, but definitely guided by the production teams. And we definitely realized after we've watched enough reality TV to see that there's a clear narrative that the show wants to present to the world. So we have our villains that, we're jeering at, and we have our heroes that we are rooting for. And that's definitely a product of editing in the back room, right? And so I did do some of that throughout the book, the behind the scenes, the puppeteer in the back of the story is really kind of guiding and manipulating the game, and we get to see some of those behind the scenes little tactics that the creators are using.
How much of reality TV is real?
I can't answer that with a definitive number. I imagine a lot of it's in the real in the sense of the emotions that they evoke, but I think that's where the manipulation comes. These people are put in very extreme situations and, asked to do over-the-top things in front of the whole world. And so I think a lot of those emotions are real. I think some of the chess pieces being moved, that's what's manipulated.
It seems to me that, you're an Iowa native by way of Mason City, I believe, and I think you've lived in some small towns in South Dakota as well. It seems to me nowadays people love having everybody know their business, and that comes from even just people putting crazy updates on Facebook about when they're out of town, which I've never understood why people do. But when you have this reality TV, you're really, I mean, it's almost being like naked in front of the community. And so what do you think prompts people to go on these shows? Because I know that the impetus of one of the characters is she's got a child with health problems. She needs money. She's been left without a spouse. And so what do you think makes people shed all this veil of privacy and put it out there for all the world to see?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to think about that. You know, for Mayor, obviously it was desperation for, you know, getting a large amount of money fast. I think that that's an element to it, that, you know, the prizes that we see on reality TV are getting bigger and bigger. But also, you know, there's the question, is it worth it? Is $1 million worth it, you know, laying your soul there for the world to see and to judge? And, but I think there's so many different motivations. There's, you know, the need, you know, some people are very competitive. Some people do want to find the limelight. Some people might think of it as a catalyst for another step in their journey or career. So, you know, I think it's individual for each person. But, you know, I think people fall into two categories. They're the folks that say, I would never go on a reality show. And then there are the people who are like, oh, yeah, you know, I think it would be a lot of fun kind of person.
From your own comfort level, when you write about Iowa, the land that you know, and then you write a book here that takes place on the West Coast, is that lose a certain comfort level for you as a writer when it's taken out of the terrain that you've written so well about before?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. I feel so comfortable writing about Iowa and the landscape that I am so familiar with. And, you know, Iowa's home to me, and I like to share that with readers around the world. But, you know, I do also like to challenge myself. And really, for this story to be told and told in the way that it needed to be, I needed to step out of my comfort zone, just like the characters in the book. And you know, really just dive into a new place. And it was a lot of fun. It was challenging, but I really enjoyed it.
I'm chatting with Heather Guttenkopf, who is out with her brand new novel, Everyone is Watching. This is number 10 for Heather, and it's just a fantastic catalog of books that she's written over the years. Heather, right or wrong, I always have this image of you when I read one of your books, that you're like the TV character J.B. Fletcher, Jessica Fletcher, on Murder, She Wrote. I know you don't live in Cabot Cove, Maine, but you live in Iowa, and I can just see you riding your bicycle around, and people say, there's the mystery writer there. And then this book reminded me of when Jessica Fletcher would be outside the country or something, solving a mystery. And so, is your life like that in Iowa? Do people know you as the town mystery writer? Is that how that works?
I grew up in Mason City, and I think I was known there as the Shemitah girl, one of the Shemitah girls. And when I moved to Dubuque with my husband, got married there, I was, Heather or Mrs. Guttenkopf, the teacher and friend. And so I think, you know, my writing persona is so intertwined with just being Heather that, you know, I don't get recognized, you know, and people are just very kind and supportive of me, just as a person. And that's really all I can hope for.
Do people ever probe your mind, your sinister mystery type mind of, for actual real life mysteries?
They always wonder where I get my ideas from, and always ask about my childhood, if I had this deep, dark childhood, but I did not. I grew up in a very supportive family. I get my ideas from the news, from, just the world around me, like, you know, most authors do. And I do have people come up once in a while and, you know, say, you really should write about this, or have you heard about this? And that's, you know, that's always fun to hear about. But I often say, you know, that sounds like the story that you might want to write, and because it's so important to find, you know, when you're working on a book, a story, find something that you are connected with in the sense of interest, and you're going to spend the next year or 2 years on. And so it's always fun to chat with readers, so.
I'm sure this book took you a while to write, and so was there ever a point at which you decided to scrap it all together and say, I can't finish this?
You know, I typically do not scrap projects, no matter how challenging they are. And I think that's part of my competitive spirit, too, is like, I am going to figure this out. Because, you know, writing a thriller mystery is really one big puzzle. And I get frustrated. I get, you know, like, feel like throwing the whole thing out. I think I rewrote this book 3 times. The ending's completely different. Some of the characters are completely gone from the page, but I think that for me, that's just part of the process. And in the writing is where I find the characters and the story really develops. And, you know, there's lots of pitfalls in that, but there's also lots of fun surprises for me, even as a writer.
When you take a character out of a book, I've always been interested when writers do this, is, I mean, those are your babies. Those are people that you've created, and you probably think they're great at the time, but is there a personal, maybe a jealous streak that I don't want to get rid of this character, but it has to go, and then what do you do with that character? Is it just gone from your mind, or can you use that character later?
Yeah, no, it's really hard to cut characters and even scenes from books. You know, you spend a lot of time and sometimes days and weeks and months on a scene or a character. And yes, it's hard, but, you know, taking that time to look over the project as a whole and seeing what characters lend themselves to the story is so important. So being honest on what's working and not working is important. I'll pluck a character out, but I have, you know, a file where I keep all my discarded little bits of writing. And, you know, some of the characters that have come and gone still stick with me. And so I imagine they may show up in a different project down the road.
10 is a pretty satisfying number, and it's just an amazing number of books to have written, especially when writing was not your main source of, you know, it's not your profession, you're a school teacher. And so do you ever just sit and look at the pile of writing that you've done and take a pride in that, or do you even have time to do that? You're just always writing.
Oh, no, it's such an amazing feeling, and it never gets old, and it's never far from my mind how fortunate I am that I've been able to do 2 things that I love. In my life, career-wise, I taught for many years, and I get to write, and so I know how fortunate I am, and just grateful every day to be able to do things that I love.
How much has the style of writing changed for you as style guides have been updated over the years? Because, I mean, the most famous one now is that the word black is capitalized when referring to somebody's race, and the W of white is not capitalized. Has that changed for you over the years, and have you found things out as you've sent it to editors?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, culturally we change and, you know, update and get better and more, you know, more inclusive, which I think is really, really important in all forms of literature. And as I'm writing, I just write. And I say I write ugly. I just get everything on the page. And then as the revision process and where that styling and comes into, you know, much more play in the later phases of a project, I'm lucky enough to have some great people around me who, you know, catch some of the things that I might miss. So early readers are really important. You know, my editor, of course, copy editors and proofreaders are really important. In the industry now, there are sensitivity readers, which I think is really important as well, who might read a project to see if something might, you know, be hurtful to another group of people, and so I think being mindful of that is really important. So I welcome that perspective, because I would never intentionally want to go out and hurt a reader in some way. That said, though, you know, for the purpose of the story, we have some characters who say really awful things and are really awful people sometimes. So how that, you know, you don't want it to necessarily disrupt what the story is being told, but you want your story done in a way that is mindful of the world around us today.
Well, it's just another amazing thriller, and I'm always they always keep me up at night because I generally don't start reading until about 10 o'clock at night, but this one entertained me for like 3.5 hours. It was just fantastic.
Oh,
this book is called Everyone is Watching. It's the latest novel from Heather Guttenkopf, and if you've never read one of her novels, go back and check out the previous 9 because they are all entertaining, especially for those of us who live in the state of Iowa. You get to learn a little Iowa history in some of them, too, and which I've done over the years. Heather, just a fantastic offering from you, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
San Francisco.